This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Daniel Craig made his career as an actor first in the theater and in British indie films. And when he showed up in Hollywood, he was usually in smaller roles, often as a villain. So in 2005, Daniel Craig seemed as surprised as anyone to find himself cast as the original super spy, Ian Fleming's James Bond.
I'm looking most forward to actually starting, getting on with it, and being intimidated just by just about everything.
Are you looking forward to becoming a legend?
Oh, I don't know about that.
Why would I betray you?
15 years later comes No Time to Die, Daniel Craig's fifth and final appearance as Bond. Critics said he revitalized the franchise, presenting a more complex, morally compromised Bond suited to our times. And yet, Daniel Craig hasn't always been thrilled with the life of a blockbuster action hero. He's gone back to the theater whenever he could. And as he takes off Bond's tuxedo now, he's preparing to play Macbeth on Broadway. You know, I remember seeing you as Iago in a production, a terrific production of Othello. And I had to wonder what the different, radically different challenges of playing Iago in a relatively small room, playing Shakespeare, in the course of 2.5 hours or whatever, however long Othello takes to put on in a given night, as opposed to these sprawling, epic, comic, serious action feats. It just has to be incredibly radical, much more radical than playing violin in the London Symphony and then playing in a rock band. It just seems so disconnected. How are they connected? How not?
Both of which I wish I could do. Yes, I mean, listen, on a purely acting level, when you're doing it, there's little difference because you're trying to aim for some truth. You're trying to aim for some, to ground things in reality. But of course, doing a play and doing it night after night, there's a sort of, I suppose there's a purity to it. It's like, you know, it's like a firework. You know, you sort of light the blue touch paper and when you do a play and you're off. And with a movie, you know, you stop and you start and you go back and you kind of consider and you can do this and you can do that. But I don't try and differentiate between the two because I think that they're, you know, they both require the same muscles.
They do.
They do, yeah. I mean, there's a lot more, you know, chat.
In Shakespeare. Can you tell me about one day of shooting that is illustrative of what it's like to play James Bond?
I remember there was a sequence at the beginning of Quantum of Solace, which was a roof chase. It involved me running into a room, looking out of a window, seeing a bus 2 stories down, and leaping out of the window. And I was on a jerk harness, and the bus, I stop above the bus, but the bus goes under me, you know? So there's a lot of moving parts going on. And you can't really rehearse that until you're in the right situation. It was a real street in Siena. It was all of these things. And I'd done jumps, so I knew the jerk, how it worked and how it felt and, you know, the jerk of it, because it's called a jerk harness and it jerks you. But I remember standing there and it was a second unit shot and I didn't know any of the crew. And I was sort of introducing myself, but nervously introducing myself because I was really nervous and I was with somebody. And I kind of felt very alone. I felt, my God, what am I doing? This is crazy. I'm leaping out of a window into the path of an oncoming bus. And it was a moment, that moment, when I suddenly went, but hey, I'm leaping out of a window in the path of an oncoming bus. Let's do it. It's like, and I kind of suddenly just, you know, I did it. I mean, we did it twice, I think. And, you know, and I just, it was a kind of moment. The moment was so big. And I realized that what I was doing was so big and so out of my comfort zone and like nothing I'd ever done before in my life. And will do since. I just had to kind of embrace it and just sort of go, okay, try and look good while you're doing it. That's a kind of that's the note, you know, attempt to look good while you're doing it.
What is the injury report as your Bond career has come to a sad close? What does the hospital report look like for you?
Well, I'm a good friend. I'm a very good friend of a guy called Andy Cosgira, who's my surgeon at John Hopkins. It's John Hopkins, who I've become very close to.
You've kept him in business.
I've kept him very busy over the years, and he's as of a couple of surgeons, another one in London, who James Calder, who's looked at. I broke my ankle on this last one, and he patched me up on this one, so I have to give them a name check. I threw myself into these at the very beginning. I've been a massive fan since a child of Buster Keaton and Harold Lloyd, and for me. I used to watch those movies on a Saturday morning. They play on the television sort of one after the other. So from about 7 o'clock in the morning on British television. Mm. And all I remember is thinking, it's them. It's really them. It's that's their faces. They're there. And when I got involved with this, I thought, at least for some of this movie, it's got to be me. And I know we can face replace. And I know there's ways of faking it. And I know there's, and I had amazing stunt doubles who did crazy stuff for me. But at a certain point in the movie, I wanted the audience to go, oh, shit, it's him.
Yeah.
And that's where I started. Yeah. So I wanted to end that way. And after Spectre, I broke my leg very badly. And I was very, it was stressful on myself emotionally, but also just physically stressful. I could have gone two ways. I could have stopped the movie, had surgery. We could have shut down for 9 months and I could have come back again. Or I could carry on and we could, you know, risk me collapsing on my knee. And at the end of that, I thought, well, I can't do this anymore. I can't, because if I can't do the physical stuff, at least to that, to a certain level, what's the point? I started off like that, so why would I? So I wanted to give up. I really wanted to give up. And a couple of years of healing, and I was mad enough to go back.
Well, did you ever think to yourself, enough of this shit? I only get one body.
Many, many, many times. But, you know, there were too many good things going on. There were too many amazing, you know, it's very, very, very rare air making a Bond movie. The privilege of getting to do that, anybody getting to do that, but for me to get to do that in five movies is so... I can't actually properly take it in. I mean, if you ask me to try and unpick it, what it means, I couldn't do it.
But do you feel more sanguine about it now? I mean, there maybe it was the press was not representing it properly or not. But here and there, one would get a report, and it seemed Daniel Craig's getting a little grumpy about Bond and maybe breaking his leg every so often, and he's had enough and. Let's go to Macbeth or something.
You know, I kind of had this. I did this comment where I said I'd rather slash my wrists, and it became a big deal. And
that was one hint. Yeah,
that was one hint. Yeah, was that? And I remember being asked, "Do you want to redo the interview?" And I was like, oh, "No, that's how I feel." And that was probably a mistake. But hey ho. What pissed me off so much was the fact that I thought I couldn't do them again, and do them to that level, and that was what got me. And I was like, you know, and there were times when the movies were a struggle. We had, you know, Quantum, we had a writer's strike, we had an actor's strike, possibly we had no, you know, we had half a script, we didn't have it, you know, and I was trying to rewrite a script, which is not a good thing. And all of these things. And those pressures just felt like, God, is this the way it has to be? Does it have to be this much of a struggle? But things work themselves out. I mean, I just wore my heart on my sleeve, and I think I could have been a bit more, I definitely could have been a little bit more, what's the word, delicate about what I was saying, what I thought
diplomatic,
about things.
Yes. But did it indicate in yourself that you feared in some way that the Bondness of your career might overcome or overwhelm the rest of it, despite its rewards, despite its fun, despite its remuneration.
Yeah, I think I definitely felt that at the beginning. And listen, I went in with open eyes. I knew, you know, I mean, I weighed it up. But I think for a while I thought, oh God, is this going to be, what am I doing to myself here? Am I destroying something as opposed to, but that just got better and better. And I think, listen, lots of things happened to me personally, and I just got softer about everything. Mm. I started to enjoy it. I started to look at it in a way that for what it is, that it's an incredible experience. And also, again, just to go back to just the people that work, I get the chance to work with. I can't be pissed off about that. Mm.
Now, this looks very much, this is your swan song as James Bond. And you've been quoted as saying, when asked 10 million times, who's going to be next and all that, that you don't give, well, you know what you don't give. But you also care about this franchise.
There's a nicer way. It's not my problem, which is a nicer way of saying it.
Yeah, fair enough. But you seem to care a lot about both the past of this franchise and its quality. What would you like to see in it as a fan, as a moviegoer? How do you think it'll develop?
Well, first off, I'll be front and center when the next one happens. I mean, I'll be on the front row with my popcorn and a big drink. I mean, because I love Bond movies, so I'll be happy to be there. I tried to leave it in a good place, and I had a deal with Barbara to get to this point.
Barbara Broccoli, the producer.
Mm. A verbal deal. but it's always where this was the direction I always wanted to take it.
What was the deal exactly?
Well, without kind of ruining the movie, I can't really. But it was just if I do four of these movies, which was my deal, would you let me end it the way I want to end it? And she said yes. I wanted to push it as far as I could push it, and that's what I would hope would happen. I've never tried to steer away or hide from the fact that Bond is who he is. I've always just tried to bring everything up to him so that, like specifically for the female characters, that they're as complicated and as difficult and as interesting as he is. But that's for selfish reasons. I hope that the movies expand in that way, that they represent and they become a greater reflection of society. That's what we've tried to do. And nobody should be constrained. Listen, with anything, there's a few rules in Bond, and I think those rules are good. I think they're interesting, and I think people want them, and I think that's why people go and see a Bond movie. But if you get those right, then it's open season as far as I'm concerned. I mean, I've tried to show a Bond that hurts, that feels, that doesn't get up again so easily when they're knocked down, and. I think it's possible to absolutely go anywhere you want to do.
Daniel Craig, thank you so much. And I hope to be seeing you in the theater very soon with almost anything.
Great. That's wonderful. Thank you. Thank you so much. It's so lovely to talk to you.
Daniel Craig, his last movie is James Bond, No Time to Die, is in theaters now.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.